It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's true what they say. Everything in Texas is just bigger. The people of Texas are going to re-elect a man who has become a really good friend of mine. You know, we had our little difficulties, right? But actually, if you remember, the beginning, it was a love fest. Nobody has helped me more with your tax cuts, with your regulation, with all of the things that we're doing. You know, what's happening right now as a large group of people, they call it a caravan. That is an assault on our country. This will be the election of the caravan, Kavanaugh, law and order, tax cuts, and common sense. Today's Democrat Party would rather protect criminal aliens than American citizens, which is why the Democrats must be voted out of office. The Democrats want to replace freedom with socialism. And they want to replace the rule of law with the rule of the mob. Democrats produce mobs. Republicans produce jobs. In this election, you can send a message to the radical Democrats, don't mess with Texas.
All right, that was President Trump in Houston, Texas last night to record crowds. They filled the stadium. They had 100,000 people who signed up even before the event, and I'm sure thousands more turned out. And my understanding is Houston was actually cold overnight, night before last. I don't know about last night. I just know about the night before when people were lining up. So many of you might have been at that rally. I wish we had time. Actually, if you were at the rally and you want to tell us about it, the phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Harris County, which is where Houston is, set a new record for first day of early voting for any midterm election. 63,188 people went to the polls to cast ballots yesterday, first day. They smashed the previous mark, which was set in 2010, and that was they smashed it by more than 35,000 votes. Also, 52,413 have returned mail-in ballots, bringing the total figure at 215,601. And there's really no way to say, you know, who those voters were, except that my understanding is that at this point, early voting generally or mail-in ballots usually favor Republicans in midterms. But I don't know. So that's what's happening in Harris County. Meanwhile, across the country, Monday, President Obama was speaking. He was speaking in Nevada. And I think this is interesting. In reading in the fine print here, it wasn't just the president, the former president. He had an audience of 2,000 in a gymnasium, but it wasn't just him. He brought in hip-hop act Salt and Peppa, a reggae star called J Balvin, and actress America Ferrera. I don't know if there were other people there, but at least those three were together. And he had 2,000 people in this gymnasium. That must have been quite a come down for him, and yet it didn't seem to stop him. This is part of what he said.
When I walked into office 10 years ago, we were in the middle of the worst economic crisis of our lifetimes. That was the last time that the other party was in charge of things. I do think it's interesting. I just hope people kind of notice that every time there's a pattern where they run things into the ground and we have to come back and clean things up and then, but Nevada was hit as hard as any place. Everybody here remembers. Well, not everybody, because some of you guys are really young. Those of you who are older than 15 remember, sort of. But because of the work we did, working with people like Harry Reid, who I love. We got the economy growing again. We started the longest streak of job creation on record. We covered another 20 million people on health insurance. We brought housing back here in Nevada. We cut our deficits by more than half, partly by making sure the wealthiest Americans, folks like me, paid their fair share of taxes. So by the time I left office, wages were rising, uninsurance rate was falling, poverty was falling, and that's what I handed off to the next guy. So when you hear all this talk about economic miracles right now, remember who started it. Remember
all right,
who
that's
started.
Enough of that. Remember who started it. You know, he did everything. He's the reason for the economic growth. I don't know if people are buying, really, surely, people are not buying that anymore. At least 2,000 of them were in that auditorium in Nevada yesterday, while 100,000 came, stayed in line. I don't know, not 100,000 people, but thousands. And 100,000 people responded they were coming. Thousands stood in line overnight to see President Trump. So it's pretty interesting, isn't it? This is a very interesting time we're living in. Meanwhile, that takes us to, I think, you know, the thing that's on our headlines and before us constantly, and that is this so-called caravan coming up through Mexico now from Honduras and Guatemala. And William Lajeunesse weighed in on it last night with a good report. Let's listen.
A showdown heading towards the U.S. border as the migrant caravan began moving some 25 miles north Monday, helped by Mexicans offering food, water, and transportation.
You know, like these people are doing right now. Look at them. They got good hearts.
Since leaving Honduras last week, organizers say the group doubled in size to more than 7,000. Some applied for asylum here, but most say they want to enter the U.S., legally or not, despite the president's warning.
This is not going to be easy. But, you know, it's a lot of people. I don't think he's going to be able to stop a lot everybody.
After first telling President Trump it would stop the caravan, Mexico reversed course, overwhelmed by sheer numbers and wanting to avoid a violent confrontation. The immigrants also know the U.S. cannot catch or deport them all, releasing hundreds of Central Americans each day because of court decisions and a lack of shelter space.
I don't know if we're gonna apply for asylum, you know. That depends if we can get there first, you know. But my dream is get through the border.
That remains some 1,400 miles away, or roughly a three-month walk. Migrants hope buses or the train will cut that time in half. Their final destination, we're told, California, not Arizona or Texas. Mexico says roughly 1,000 families applied for asylum here. If approved, they can stay in Mexico to live and work. The United Nations Refugee Agency is helping process those claims, but also makes the distinction between migrants fleeing crime and poverty versus likely victims of racial, religious, or political persecution.
Migrants are the ones that willingly are leaving their countries to pursue a better future, as you mentioned. While refugees are people that they don't have the possibility to go back, either because they will face death or retaliation.
All right, well, that was part of William's report last night on a special report of Fox News. And some are saying this caravan, so-called caravan, I think it's an invasion. Caravan is just too kind, has grown to about 14,000 people. And, of course, there's speculation about who those people are. I want to tell you some of the things I'm reading about this. The first observation I need to make before I go into that, though, is you do understand that if we continue to allow this, my understanding is that there's another caravan forming now into Central America to start the same thing, that there will be endless numbers, millions of people who will absolutely come across our border because it doesn't have a wall, doesn't have the protection that it needs, no thanks to the Democrats and no thanks to the Republican leadership, who I think, by the way, in the lame duck session and when this election is over, if they should prevail, will be forced to do something that they've never been willing to do, at least not during my time, only conservatives, not since George W. Bush, were they able really or ever had the will to really stop the invasion of illegal immigrants to our southern border. And so maybe this will change things. Maybe this will all be a good thing in the long run. I hope so. But back to this particular invasion, Many of them, these are just reports. This one's from Washington Times. Members of the illegal immigrant caravan chanted, "Si se pudo," which means, yes, we could. Taken from, you know, the Barack Obama, yes, we can. So they're shouting, yes, we can. Also, here's a picture that came out in a report by the Associated Press of two Hondurans burning an American flag, which has a swastika painted on it. That was in a rally, I think, on Friday the 19th in front of the American Embassy. Here's another one. Multiple American flags burned. The BBC shows a second flag set ablaze and treated like garbage. This is, so here's another one. This is a television camera, News 8, wherever that is. It shows people in the caravan not only carrying their own country's flags, like Honduras, but putting up their middle fingers. So there's a clear picture, more than one, of that. There's a lot of things here. Here's somebody from the American Thinker who writes, back in the old days when immigrants arrived in America, they'd kiss the ground. Now Central American caravan illegals have got here and they give us the bird. This is Monica Showalter in the American Thinker. This is what she writes. Buried in the News 8 broadcast from San Diego was footage of illegal migrants and their supporters on the U.S. side breaching the U.S. fence on the border, waving a big Honduran flag victory style and whipping out a big middle finger at America. In times past, arriving immigrants used to kiss the earth. Today, they wave the middle finger. Look at these photos, both from News 8 and CBS National Report. Rough and blurry, admittedly, showing just what that caravan was about in all its anti-American tenor, which, frankly, should have been the lead to the story. For a publicity stunt as staged as the migrant caravan from Central America, one that one might have expected to have been carefully choreographed to advance their narrative of needy people with sob stories needing asylum, what does it say that all we see are military-aged young men, some with tattoos, illegally entering the U.S. under the Honduran banner and angrily flashing the middle finger in what might have been their first moments in America? And there are numerous other pictures in this. We will put that, by the way, that article from the American Thinker on our Facebook page so that you can share it. And I don't know if she has some of these pictures. Not sure about that, but they're just shocking. They really are. They do remind me of those photos we saw of the invasion into Germany of Muslim young men. So that's the makeup. Last night I noticed, I'm not going to have time to play this, but John Roberts was very snarky, as he often is, and he was talking about the president making claims that this was had people from the Middle East, and it was unverified, but he claimed, well, I know where it came from. It came from Univision correspondent Francisco Santa Anna. At least in part it came from him. The president might have other sources, but this one I know about because he has been embedded with them for the last several months, and he said that he was discovering that Bangladeshis had buried themselves within this crowd. Bangladesh, by the way, has the largest population of Muslims, one of the largest populations of Muslims in the world. They are very infiltrated by ISIS. They've been involved in several terrorist attacks. So that's where the president got it, John, just in case you missed that news story. And the president now is, of course, threatening to do something. He says, I have alerted Border Patrol and military that this is a national emergency. Sadly, it looks like Mexico's police and military are unable to stop the caravan. I have alerted Border Patrol and military that this is a national emergency. We must change the laws. One last thing. He says we're substantially reducing massive foreign aid routinely given to El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala. And there isn't much we can do on the border right now unless we bring in the military. Some are saying we should ban the entire group since it really is an invasion, not an insurgence of people seeking refuge. I don't know what he's going to do, but you can imagine he'll try to do something, and you can imagine the courts will, of course, step in to stop him. This is Sandy Rios. By the way, stay tuned, because Kim Cuccinelli will join me next. We're going to be talking about the Senate races. Stay tuned.
Meet Roxy, nurse director for the preborn clinic in Southern California.
I have this lady, and she came, and she was very scared. boyfriend didn't want her to have a baby, and she said, I don't want this baby. We provided an ultrasound. She was laying on a table, and there it was. It was a small baby. Then she heard the heartbeat. She heard the heartbeat, and she said, well, you know, it's alive. After hearing the heartbeat, she made a decision that she was going to keep her baby. She also made a decision that day to recommit herself to Jesus.
Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country, helping abortion-minded mothers to choose life for their unborn babies. To find out more about how you can help save a baby's life, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile season 2 and are producing season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit AFA.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Coe, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The so-called migrant caravan is getting bigger, as many as 10,000 by some accounts. The migrants bound for the U.S. border, some waving Honduran flags.
You have some very, very bad people in the caravan. You have some very tough criminal elements within the caravan. But I will seal off the border before they come into this country. And I'll bring out our military, not our reserves. I'll bring out our military.
And some of the so-called migrants are not big fans of President Trump.
Donald Trump is an anticristo.
Donald Trump is the Antichrist, this man says. If he doesn't repent, he's going to hell. We are not criminals. We are workers and fighters.
So look, the American people should bend over backwards to welcome immigrants who wish to come to this nation legally. But we have no obligation to care for those who want to come here illegally. And for the record, anyone crossing our border waving another nation's flag, that's called an invasion. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
But if you want the fake news to finally investigate Hillary Clinton, we'll just have... Yeah. I didn't do it. So if you want him to investigate, we'll just have to nominate Hillary Clinton to the United States Supreme Court. How do you like that idea?
Right. Sandy Rios, we had to have a little humor this morning. The president was on his game last night for that 100,000 people that came to see him in Houston. And of course, I'm sure the mainstream press will have fun with that, but you get the point. He talks about Brett Kavanaugh, you know, being raked over the coals. We all remember that. And if only Mrs. Clinton had even had a third of that scrutiny, we might be in a different place. Sandy Rios back with you. The primary is 2 weeks from today. 2 weeks from today will determine who controls, especially the House. Less likely the Senate now, and yet those races are stacking up very interesting, interestingly, and we have 2 weeks left, and no one knows exactly what might happen in the next 2 weeks. Ken Cuccinelli is the head of Senate Conservatives Fund, which is an organization started by Jim DeMint, which supports financially in every other way true conservative candidates. Ken, thanks for joining us this morning.
Sandy, good to be with you again.
Yeah, I need to make that clear, because you always do, and that is that you guys don't support just Republicans. I think you know. And have you ever endorsed a Democrat so far?
No Democrats. We've been looking for an independent running somewhere that was a conservative, but most of the high-profile independents in the last few years have been Democrats, like Angus King in Maine and so forth, and that character in Kansas a couple elections ago. But so far, it's been all Republicans. But unlike a lot of other organizations, we don't just endorse Republicans. I mean, some organizations that call themselves XYZ by election day will have endorsed every Republican running, and we don't do that. We will not drop our standards from full spectrum conservatives. That means life, marriage, taxes, debt, you name it. We have an across the board standard for our candidates, and we're the biggest PAC in the country that functions that way. Jim DeMint, when he was in the U.S. Senate, founded the Senate Conservatives Fund, and we've never lowered our standards. And 2 years ago, this year we have seven candidates we're supporting, Sandy, for the Senate. 2 years ago, we only had two, and we didn't get more candidates. Instead, we kept our standards up, but there weren't any worth supporting. So we didn't. We maintained our standards, and so our members know that when we endorse a candidate, they are the real deal, people who will think and act independently. These are the people who, you know, if someone steps up to run against Mitch McConnell, we would expect these people to support such a senator. And they'll vote conservative, and we won't be held hostage by Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski anymore.
Yes,
if we can get some of these folks elected.
And also, just to give it some more background, Ken, because, you know, people have short memories and busy lives. It was Senate Conservatives Fund that gave us Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Marco Rubio, yep. Rand Paul, and I don't know who else at this point. But
there are 11 senators in the U.S. Senate that were SCF-endorsed senators. Ben Sasse, Tom Cotton, Joni Ernst in the 2014 cycle. We've only endorsed two incumbents ever, Mike Lee in 2016 and Ted Cruz this cycle, because both of them, you may recall, were facing the possibility of establishment challenges in primaries, and both of them worked hard and fended those off and avoided them. And of course, Ted is facing the best-funded Democrat challenger in the country in Beto O'Rourke. It's amazing that a Bernie Sanders candidate is doing as well as O'Rourke is doing. And by the way, you mentioned election days in 2 weeks, and that's true. But for five of our seven candidates, it's already here. There's early voting in Texas, Indiana, where we're supporting Mike Braun, Tennessee with Marsha Blackburn, Montana with Matt Rosendale, the state auditor there, running against John Tester. And let me think, who else? Not Michigan, West Virginia, Patrick Morrissey running against Joe Manchin. Early voting has begun in five of the seven states where we're supporting candidates. So for your listeners, they may, depending on what state they live in, they may already be able to go vote for conservative candidates, and I hope they will. Get that vote in the bank and then help those candidates rope in more voters, because that's one of the challenges. Not everybody will go vote if they aren't contacted by somebody they know and respect, and that's one of the best things people can do at this stage.
You know, before you join me, I was just reporting that Harris County, Houston's county, had a record. They blew it out. You know, they have 35,000 more voters than the record set in 2010. 63,188 people registered or voted on the first day of early voting. So that's a, and they also have, well, anyway, so it's, and I also heard an analysis, Ken, you may have seen this, of someone who was analyzing, was it early voting?
Who was voting?
Absentee ballots, I think. And they were, the Republicans were way ahead in Florida, Arizona, and I'm not sure what the other states were. But It's interesting. We can't count on that. Conservatives can't count on that, but it is an interesting factor. Now, I want to just ask you,
well,
just a general...
having run campaigns, I would tell you that is one of the mechanical things. That shows you what's a good campaign. A campaign that can beat the Democrats in that area is running a good, on-the-ground, nuts-and-bolts campaign. Because I've beaten Democrats doing it in Virginia. It's hard to do. They are just historically better at it than we are. But that's a good measure of the performance of campaigns.
Yeah, one thing I did not say about you is that you were the Attorney General in Virginia, the nation's leader on fighting Obamacare. So that's another bit of background people should know about you, Ken. I want to ask you a general question. Looking at the polls, the absentee ballots, the trends, the news cycle, all of that, if the election were to take place today, what do you think the worst case scenario would be for conservatives, given the metrics?
Well, if you're asking me worst case scenario, it's still a pickup of probably one or two seats. Worst case would be one. But the opportunity exists to get as many as five. And the difference between those are virtually all conservatives plus Rick Scott in Florida. The people on the bubble are Mike Braun and Josh Hawley, who I think are ahead today. Mike Braun running in Indiana, conservative. Josh Hawley, the conservative attorney general in Missouri. And people who are very close, Patrick Morrisey in West Virginia, also attorney general. No bias on my part, really. and state auditor Matt Rosendale in Montana. Those are on-the-cusp conservative races where people donating money, calling people they know in those states, taking every step they can to advance their cause right now, can do more than any place else in the country right now.
So you're saying that, I do say this a lot, but I'll repeat, that people are not constrained to just support candidates in their state or their district. A lot of times, and I know because I'm from Illinois, many times you can't find anyone in your state. Yeah, you get that. Anyone in your state to support. Didn't used to be that way, Ken. When I was first on radio, we had some really wonderful politicians, including Peter Fitzgerald and other people that I was able to support. But it changed. Yeah. And so it's possible for you to support people outside of your state with your resources. You can make phone calls. You can fly there or drive there and walk precincts. Just coordinate with them. There's all kinds of things you can do. I'm assuming Senate Conservatives Fund is still accepting donations too, right, Ken?
Yeah, absolutely, SenateConservatives.com. And one of the things that we do is we raise separate money to fund this whole operation. So if you donate to Matt Rosendale or Josh Hawley or Patrick Morrisey through SenateConservatives.com, you donate $100, $100 will end up in their coffers. We pay the transaction costs, the visa costs, you know, all of that stuff. If you donated to them through their own website, they'd have to pay that $30 or $40. So you actually deliver them more money through SenateConservatives.com. And that's what we do best is we bundle hard dollars, is what they're called hard dollars because the candidates get to spend them. Having been a candidate, I can tell you there is nothing more valuable. I would trade $2 of spending outside my campaign for $1 inside any day of the week. And remember, the one thing Democrats are really beating us at across the board this year is fundraising. All of the candidates, even Ted Cruz facing Beto O'Rourke, a challenger against an incumbent, are being outspent by and large across the country. And yet our candidates are competitive because they have compelling message, and people are seeing more and more what the Democrats are about. They're violent supporters, they're socialists, they're genuine socialists with everything that goes with that. And Sandy, you and I know you don't escape your philosophy. Socialism, actually implemented, encourages and utilizes violence. I mean, it uses power to suppress. That's what the left is about. They're about freedom of speech so long as what you say agrees with what they believe. And we're seeing candidates all over the place who fit in that agenda. Ted Cruz has done a good job exposing Beto O'Rourke. You're seeing it in the governor's race in Florida with Ron DeSantis against Gillum. I mean, we're seeing it in races all across the country. And some of the wild left-wingers getting elected in the House for the Democrats, Octavia Cortez being the most famous, really shows us what's coming. It shows us what's coming. In the Senate, we have the chance to not only pick up Republican seats, which is nice, but we have the chance to pick up conservative seats. So we don't have to worry about people like Josh Hawley and Patrick Morrissey, Mike Braun, Matt Rosendale, Marsha Blackburn, when it comes to judges. You don't have to water down your judge selection if you're President Trump because of the Lisa Murkowskis and Susan Collins and Jeff Flakes of the world.
Well, I'm thinking, too, just look at the budget disaster, Ken. The terrible budget that was, or the spending package that was passed by the Senate most recently, which really gave the Democrats
by
everything
the
they wanted.
By the Republican Senate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So would you say that four more conservatives in the Senate could actually stop something like that?
Well, that's why it's so important, is because it's critically important to expand that block of votes. So Rand Paul had what I consider to be the benchmark budget vote this year. He proposed an amendment which basically was an across-the-board 1% cut of everything. And that way there's no sacred cows. You cut everything. And look, we're bankrupt. We need to cut everything. And 21 senators voted for that amendment. Of course, all Republicans. Every SCF-endorsed senator voted for it except one. Tom Cotton was very disappointed, and Tom Cotton just will – there's literally no limit to what he'll spend on defense. And look, I want a powerful nation, but powerful nations are built on powerful economies that aren't bankrupt. And he, when I called his chief of staff, he had no defense of, you know, how do you balance that with our debt? And he didn't have anything to say on that. But when you add another four or five votes to that, it starts to pick up momentum within the caucus. When you get to a majority of the Republican caucus, then it's a debate they have at those lunches they have every week. And they can rally people to get them on board. So, yes, it makes a big difference, Sandy, because you literally can tip the balance of the caucus on budget matters. And once you've done that, it starts affecting leadership elections. And chairmanships and so forth. And all of those things add up, but we have not had an opportunity like we have in 2018 in 100 years since the mistake of the 17th Amendment made senators popularly elected. I don't think there's ever been a midterm opportunity for conservatives like 2018. And we have to take full advantage of it in a tough environment. And that means donating. It means voting. It means volunteering. It means calling your friends in these critical swing states, because every Senate election is a national election. You want to fight abortion? You live in Illinois? You can do it in West Virginia. You can support Patrick Morrissey against Joe Manchin. And, you know, Joe Manchin takes pictures with, I support Planned Parenthood people. And then he takes pictures with Students for Life. We're going to defund Planned Parenthood. You know, he's all over the place. If you want a real pro-lifer, and you want to fight abortion in the Senate, you support Patrick Morrissey against Joe Manchin. And we can go around the country and say that, Indiana, Montana, and so forth. And yeah, that opportunity exists in all these races, and 2018 is a great year for it. There's 2 weeks left. People should dig deep, make it uncomfortable financially, and donate to these folks. If you do it through SenateConservatives.com, they get every dollar.
You know, I think another factor here, unmeasurable, but if more conservatives make it into the Senate, true conservatives, Ken, these old guard establishment Republicans have been through, they've weathered quite a storm on the Kavanaugh thing, and it's become quite personal to them. And I sort of think, just psychologically evaluating and looking back, that they might be a little more pliable, a little more willing to be infused with some passion themselves, because of their close proximity to the mess the rest of us have been experiencing in the country. It's probably been a very good thing. So I would think an infusion of conservatives right now could help bring them along, too. My guest is Ken Cuccinelli. Ken, can you stay with me just for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Yeah, I want to break it down into some of these races. Like, I want to go to Indiana. I want to go to Missouri. I'd love to know, you know, kind of what's happening there from your perspective in terms of the polls and the dynamic, and then some of the other races where you're not supporting candidates, but they could also have a positive outcome for conservatives. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
there were added that day about 3,000 souls. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The day of Pentecost concluded with 3,000 converts being added to the initial body of 120 believers. Then that 3,120 spent time together daily, going to the temple and interacting in each other's homes. They devoted themselves continually to the apostles' teaching, fellowship, sharing meals together, and praying together. The 3,120 that made up the early church came from Turkey, the Middle East, and Africa, and included Arabs and Romans. In addition to the geographic and ethnic diversity, they also spoke different languages. Yet they were made one family in Christ Jesus. Scripture has the answer to the issues we face today.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Upwards of 5,000 migrants from Central America are in a caravan headed for America, many intending to cross our southern border illegally without permission. What does Jesus think about this? He gives us a pretty good hint in one of the most familiar verses in the Bible, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him and he with me." Notice clearly that Jesus recognizes here the sanctity of boundaries. There was a boundary, a border, the threshold into a man's life that not even he would cross without permission. So, migrants from Central America must first seek permission to cross the threshold into our country. It's simple. Those who receive permission will be welcomed. Those who don't, won't.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing, he had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, the U.S. Navy sent 2 warships through the Taiwan Strait. It is the latest welcome and much-needed Trump administration assertion of freedom of navigation in international waters that the communist Chinese are increasingly insisting are theirs. It should be followed by more and more durable demonstrations of America's resolve and capability to defend Taiwan and other friends and allies in the region from China's escalating threats. Specifically, the United States must reconstitute its ability to project power in the Western Pacific. This will require not only the routine deployment and wide-ranging operations of more warships and aircraft there, we must also respond comprehensively to China by fielding effective anti-missile defenses, operationalizing cyber warfare capabilities, arming the Taiwanese and other regional partners, and protecting from Chinese weapons U.S. assets in space critical to our defense of the Pacific, among other missions. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
If you want to talk about extremism, if you want to talk about discrimination, Mr. Ellison here has been associated with Louis Farrakhan, a terrible anti-Semite, for quite a long time. And Mr. Farrakhan is someone who said just a few days ago he compared Jews to termites. That is just abhorrent and evil. And, you know, Mr. Ellison here has never denounced Louis Farrakhan.
We were going to get to that later, but I can't let it sit there and rest for several minutes without you answering it. So, Mr. Ellison, you have 30 seconds, and then we'll move on to another topic.
I absolutely
qualifiedly denounce and dismiss and avoid and reject the views of Louis Farrakhan. I've said that many, many years ago. Look, in the early 1990s, Louis Farrakhan was a person speaking to issues of African-American civil rights. At that time, he had some things I thought he had to offer. He made it very clear in the early 90s that his views and mine were absolutely incompatible, and I've been saying that ever since, and my opponents keep on dragging it up, but
actually,
it isn't
I just
true.
Need to respond
it's
to that because the Washington
true.
Post, for trying
Gentlemen,
to dissociate
we,
yourself from Mr. Farrakhan,
we have more than another half hour to go.
Let's said that you gave you a word of four Pinocchios. And, you know, in 1995, you penned an op-ed
Mr.
in Insight News.
Mr. Wardlow,
95
we,
was
we
a long
will,
time
we will
ago.
Continue
you
with
called
this,
him a role views model have, for youth.
My
Gentlemen.
Views have changed dramatically since then.
Of course, that was the voice of Doug Wardlow, who is challenging Keith Ellison for attorney general in Michigan. Sorry. Keith Ellison, the first Muslim congressman in the Congress, and goes back a long way with Louis Farrakhan. What he just said is really not true. That's why the Washington Post gave him four Pinocchios for claiming this before. In fact, we know that I could give you a rundown of a lot of meetings and associations he's had with Louis Farrakhan, including a hotel meeting between him, Ellison, Farrakhan, and Democratic Muslim Congressman Representative Andre Carson, which he has denied, but both Carson and Farrakhan have verified that. So that was a debate last night between Doug Wardlow, who is the Republican candidate, and Keith Ellison. Ken Cuccinelli is my guest. Ken, do you have a comment on that particular race? I know that's off the track a bit, but just be interesting to hear what you think about it.
I pay attention to these attorney general races, as we've seen, I think, starting really with us fighting Obamacare, something I was first out of the box to do. The bigger role that attorneys general have taken in trying to block illegal federal policies, and you've got a guy like Ellison in Minnesota, who really would be a terrible fit for that office. The Republican is very capable, very qualified, and Ellison has just got so much baggage. It's amazing to me what it takes for Democrats to abandon a candidate. I mean, here's a guy who's been confronted with domestic violence, with lying about, even the Washington Post says he was lying about his Louis Farrakhan views. And for those who don't know about Farrakhan, the guy is, short of utilizing violence, he is as awful a character as you could possibly imagine commenting and participating in politics. I mean, it's just beyond the pale, really. And yet, Ellison has embraced him. It'd be an incredible, incredible mistake for the people of Minnesota to elect him attorney general.
Yeah, thank you for correcting me on that.
Hopefully that won't happen.
I'm getting my states mixed up here this morning. But yes, Minnesota, thank you for correcting me on that. I've been looking at all of these different states, and so that's a very important correction. Ken, let's go into the states themselves, the ones where you are actually working. Let's do that first. And in Indiana, Joe Donnelly, last I heard, was ahead of Mike Braun, who was the businessman, Republican challenger, never been in politics before, as far as I know. Joe Donnelly, the Democratic incumbent, who talks like a conservative, but really isn't. So what do you think about what's happening in that race?
Well, the race really swung the last few points with the Kavanaugh debacle, I'll call it. And in Indiana, Joe Donnelly, the incumbent Democrat, was waffling. I mean, I'm going to wait and see the evidence, and I'm going to, you know, that kind of talk. And then partway through, before he'd seen all the evidence, he came out and took a position, which obviously made him look very much like a flip-flopper. Because, well, he was. one of the problems of that is the people who want you to oppose Kavanaugh end up being somewhat happier than wondering if you will or not. But a lot of the undecideds, and let's face it, there are less of those today than there were 10 years ago, they don't respect that kind of gamesmanship. And President Trump, 2 years ago, really got a lot of Americans to come out and vote for him
who had just sat on the sidelines because they were fed up. They were sick and tired of exactly that kind of behavior. And here's Joe Donnelly doing it in October of 2018. And I think that has moved the race about 5 points in Mike Braun's direction, moving it from Braun down a little to Braun up a little. And Mike would be a solid conservative vote there. He's not going to be a firebrand like Ted Cruz or Mike Lee or Rand Paul, but he's going to be a solid vote backing them continually. And the more of those we can get, the better, and especially in states like Indiana that aren't just red, but have a strong streak of Christian conservatism that run through the state. We should have better candidates like Mike Braun. It's why the Senate Conservatives Fund is supporting him.
And of course, in Missouri, I think I would assess, based on talking to you many times, Josh Hawley's one of your favorite candidates. And you, since we last talked, James O'Keefe,
even before he was Attorney General, he was fighting for religious liberty, something that I know you and I both share a strong belief in, Sandy. I mean, that was before he ever thought about running for office. This guy's an all-star. Claire McCaskill has got a ton of money. But he has made real headway. The president has been visiting repeatedly. And she is a really poor match for Missouri politically. So it's a real opportunity. It's probably conservatives' best opportunity in the country for a pickup.
Really? See, because the last I looked at the polls there, they always, polls. So we know polls. But I thought Claire McCaskill was still ahead of him by a few points. No?
No, if you go all the way back into the summer, but in the polls since Labor Day, Josh has held a small lead pretty consistently. So to put it in the terms you did earlier today, if the election were held today, I think Josh would win probably by 2 points or so. But she's still outspending him, so he still needs people to donate. But it represents a tremendous opportunity for literally a very proven conservative, especially from a Christian conservative standpoint.
All right, and you've already mentioned West Virginia, but we need to go back to that because that's kind of a tough one for Pat Morrissey. I think Joe Manchin is kind of an all shucks guy, presents well, but he was on the fence also about Kavanaugh. I just wonder how that's playing. Do you have any idea?
You know, it's funny. Patrick Morrissey started saying in July, don't worry, Joe Manchin will vote for Kavanaugh. It's really just a question of the machinations between here and there. And he said it week in, week out, all the way up to the vote. And you saw what I saw, Sandy. He literally waited in the cloakroom until Kavanaugh had already gotten the 50 votes he needed, and then he came out and as a profile in courage to cast his now meaningless vote. West Virginia's tough for him. Trump won it by 42 points. Trump has been there to help Morrissey. The vice president was there this past Saturday. They really want Morrissey to beat Manchin. It's obviously a very strong Trump state. And Manchin is one of those guys who says he's one thing in West Virginia and does another in Washington. And a vote for Joe Manchin is a vote for Chuck Schumer for majority leader. I mean, it's really a very stark contrast. And Patrick fought the EPA successfully. He fought a lot of the transgender stuff that the Obama administration was trying to jam on us. He's really been a stalwart, and that race has closed. The most recent NRSC polling had Manchin up by only 1 point, 41-40, with wow, about 15% undecided. So there's a lot of room to move in Patrick's direction.
You know, I think one principle we probably need to be teaching people, our people, Ken, and I probably haven't applied it to these races, but it's true. I've applied it to President Trump, and I've... My big sister used to always tell me when I was dating to look at what a man does and not what he says. Because sometimes when people are in politics, they say a lot of wonderful things and they have a great presentation, kind of like used car salesmen. Don't look at what they say. Don't even look at their affect. Right. Look at what they do. That has to be the barometer. As much as we can know what they've actually accomplished.
That's the barometer in West Virginia. It's going to do well for Patrick Morrissey.
All right, let's talk about Montana, because I don't really know much about that race other than the personalities. You've got John Rosendale challenging John Tester.
Yes, and Tester really put himself on the president's radar when he pulled the shenanigans, you may recall, with the president's nominee to head the Department of Veteran Affairs.
Yes, and it was his personal physician.
Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, there are so many veterans in this country. They've done such good service, and they've been so poorly served, something that the president has been talking about emphatically since the campaign, his campaign 2 years ago. And Tester said some things that turned out very quickly to not be true about the guy, which is, yeah, it's like par for the course for these Democrats. I don't understand how, you know, if you believed in the things you voted for and did, to your point, Sandy, judge them by their actions, not their words, then you would stand up and you'd say, I oppose this guy for this reason. But they don't do that. They go and sneak around like Tester did and lie, frankly, trying to damage a person. And it didn't work. It certainly has brought the president to Montana more frequently. And again, this is a state the president won by something like 20 points. So Matt Rosendale is the state auditor. It's an elected statewide position. He has been the most prominent Republican fighting expansion of Obamacare in Montana, and he is a stark contrast to Tester, who is less like Manchin. He's more liberal. He's more blatant in being a liberal than even Joe Manchin is over in West Virginia. So getting Matt Rosendale in there would be a good long-term pickup for conservatives. He's a hard worker, which means he's going to keep campaigning 6 years from now to hold the seat. And as much as we think of Montana as Big Sky and libertarian conservative, it does regularly elect. They have a Democrat governor. They have a Democrat senator. It is not a place that's easy for conservatives to win. But if Matt Rosendale can keep up his momentum, the direction it's been going the last month, in two more weeks, he may pull this off. I'd urge folks to donate to his campaign. Not surprisingly, he's being outspent as well, but he is a high-quality candidate who's very, very committed to not just standing up to John Tester, Chuck Schumer, but also to Mitch McConnell and to doing the right thing within the caucus. So we need more of that.
Ken, we only have about a minute left here, but I want to quickly ask you about John James in Michigan. John is a black, very promising, very strong conservative, challenging an establishment Democrat with a lot of money and a lot of name recognition. What are your thoughts about that race?
Well, of course, John is somebody we endorsed in his primary. We feel very strongly about him, just as you do. He's a combat veteran, West Point graduate, and came back home after doing combat tours and took over the family business and grew it by another 100 employees. So he's been very successful in each of the arenas he's participated in. He's already got a track record of public service. Debbie Stabenow has been sort of a quiet but very liberal character. But you'll remember that Michigan is a state the president won by only 10,000 votes. Very close race in 2016. Tough environment. And I think John has done a very good job in a tough environment. He is definitely the most promising African-American conservative running in the country today. And he has got the longest shot. He's behind in single digits, but he's coming on strong. I just hope there's enough time for him to catch Debbie Stabenow.
All right. Ken Cuccinelli, Senate Conservatives on it's senateconservatives.com. If you would like to help, you help conservative candidates all over the place prevail in these upcoming midterm elections. Ken, thanks for your time this morning. We always appreciate it. Sandy Rios, great. In the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.